Welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In today's episode, Life Lessons in Gen X Movies, Mark and I will be looking at Singles, a romantic ensemble comedy written, directed, and produced by Cameron Crowe and set in Seattle during the burgeoning of the grunge music scene. Most of the featured characters lived in the same quirky apartment complex, and some of them work at a local coffee shop. Focusing largely on relationships, the film in many ways captured the spirit of Generation X, then known as the Slacker Generation, who were entering their 20s at this time. We are bound to confuse those of you who love grunge when we admit that we still pretty much listen to 80s new wave all the way through the 90s, but we're Gen X. We are defiant in our musical choices, and we don't really care what anyone thinks. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. Wow, you are a warrior today.
I am. How
You're like, just, you know what? This is the music I like. Come at me, bro.
I never got into grunge.
I didn't either.
I mean, there were a couple of songs. Like, I have some that I, obviously, the main ones I like.
Right. Biggie, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Corduroy. Well, I didn't really even like Jeremy.
Wow.
But I like Corduroy.
Yeah. How'd you feel about Khaki?
Huh? Oh, God.
I was just saying denim. I don't know. What fabrics are acceptable to you?
Oh, wacko.
Did you ever wear corduroy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Like, where did that go?
School.
Yeah, where'd that go?
Oh.
I mean, people just don't. It's too hot here to wear it.
Yeah, here in Florida, you wouldn't do that. But so, give me a hot take on Singles.
Well, these guys are terrible at relationships.
They really are.
But so are humans, right? Because now we've kind of abandoned our animal instincts and now have to rely on dodgy social clues. We get in our own way a lot, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're pretty bad at relationships. So, you know, this wasn't my scene, but I recognize the scene. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So when this film was made, it was 91 when it was filmed, and I think 92 when it was released. I was 22. Bridget Fonda in the film says I'm 23 years old, and we're going to talk
about
the cast. So
you're
That was
like,
me.
They're like, we went to high school with you. You were just a couple of grades behind.
Right. And you were.
I would be like, what do you people even do with your lives?
Yeah, you're 6 or 7 years old,
yeah.
Older than that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you were in your late 20s at the time.
Correct.
Married?
Yes, I was. Well, yeah. I lose track of things like that.
So. I mean, well, it was just the first
whatever.
Time.
Yeah,
just the start of
one. I mean, one of them, sure. So, but I didn't have a kid yet. So if I'm not mistaken, like, I know definitely grunge was happening then, but it had just kind of kicked off. Cameron Crowe kind of caught lightning in the bottle there with the Seattle music scene.
He had moved there, and Nancy Wilson is his wife,
yeah.
And she was from there.
Yeah.
She's
a bit of a musician herself.
She is from the band Heart.
Correct.
It was a script that he reworked. Originally, this was supposed to take place in Arizona and Phoenix, I think.
There's no music in Arizona.
But when he was living in Seattle, he was a part, obviously, seeing the music scene.
Right.
And he saw how there was a band called Mother Love Bone. The singer, the lead singer, Andrew Wood, had overdosed and died.
Oh, dear.
And so
that happened a lot back then.
He saw how the music scene kind of came together around this. All right. So to me, the grunge scene always struck me as hippies, but with like harder core, edgier music.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was definitely some political activism.
Well, there was. And, you know, it's sort of think global, act local, which is one of the characters. Linda has that on her.
Now, I have a t-shirt that says drink local. Am I helping?
Well, but see, that's a very Gen X thing.
Yeah.
Gen X is often criticized as a generation that didn't do enough. But Gen X, their activism was really focused locally.
Yeah.
And that comes across quite a bit in this film, although Linda herself does.
She's pretty global.
She is thinking globally, but certainly Steve is thinking locally with the super train and cutting
down
the traffic. Okay.
Guess what? They never built it.
No, they never did. He got it shot down. All right. So it was not a huge success.
Well, it's a little niche, right?
It was a $9 million budget distributed by Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers refused to actually release it at first. And then...
Do they know who Cameron Crowe is?
And then grunge took off. And this was after he did Say Anything. This is after...
Yeah, he's like a director. Oh, man. He's serious.
He's great. And he was actually... Cameron Crowe is the one who wrote the book that Fast Times at Ridgemont High was based on.
Yep.
So he has... He did a good job, Cameron Crowe, kind of in the same way that John Hughes documented the generations. Cameron Crowe did it, but in a more serious way than John Hughes.
Focused on a slightly different age range.
He did high school, and then he did, and then he did late high school, like early graduation, when he was doing Say Anything.
Okay. Yeah.
And then
I have hidden your keys.
Yeah. You must chill.
You must chill. Such a great movie.
That's a really good one. I think that he takes, in some ways, his characters a little bit more seriously than John Hughes did.
Yeah.
It's different.
It's a little grittier, maybe.
Slightly. And I mean, you've got John, like, for instance, John Cusack is Lloyd Dobler in Say Anything. He's like the thinking man's Jake Ryan.
Yes.
You know,
he's so much better than Jake Ryan.
Thinking woman's Jake Ryan.
Yeah, he's so much better than Jake Ryan. Girls are so confused. Mm. Like, you should pick John Cusack, even if he is an assassin.
Of course you should. Of course, Point Blank is an excellent movie. We should do that one too.
Absolutely.
Life lessons in.
Yeah, don't get shot.
Yeah. All right. So Warner Brothers dragged their heels to release it, but then grunge really hit.
And they're like, whoa.
And they're like, wow.
We should ride this wave.
And they almost wanted to call the film Come As You Are after the Nirvana song. Right. But
And that's the thing I pointed out that you poo-pooed, that where movie studios were taking the names of songs, popular songs, and making them your title so that they could put it on their soundtrack.
I stand absolutely corrected in that. Later, though, Warner Brothers took advantage of this concept.
Yeah.
Do you know how?
No.
Ensemble cast? Some of them work in a coffee shop?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
They always told me that it's going to be this way.
As a matter of fact, they asked Cameron Crowe if they could adapt it, and he said no.
Nah, I don't think so.
And then they did it anyway, and they made enough changes that after his attorneys looked at it, and that there was no way.
Because they don't have any grunge musicians in
there. Yeah, exactly.
But it was just dudes working in and around a coffee shop.
Yep. So. Yep. All right. So the cast featured not super well known, like some of them were. Bridget Fonda at the time, she was well known. Yeah. Matt Dillon.
She comes from a reasonably famous family.
Yeah, she does.
Know.
Bridget Fonda does, for sure. Peter Fonda. She's Peter Fonda's daughter. Yeah. And Henry Fonda's, I suppose.
Niece?
No, granddaughter.
Granddaughter. There you go.
And then they had Campbell Scott, who is the son of
George C. Scott. Oh, George C. Scott. Yes. He's a very famous guy.
So Bridget played Janet Livermore. Campbell Scott played Steve Dunn. Kira Sedgwick, cousin of Edie Sedgwick, the factory girl from Andy Warhol's factory, was Linda Powell. Sheila Kelly played Debbie Hunt. Matt Dillon played Cliff Poncier. And then Bill Pullman made a small appearance as a plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
And then there were full of cameos. There were so many cameos
in
this film.
We're in Seattle. Do you think we could find a musician to come in and do some cameos?
Well,
Eddie Vedder's like, can I just sit up there on the couch and just stare at TV? They're like, yeah, bro.
So this is before Pearl Jam really hit.
Yeah.
And Eddie Vedder, Jeff Ament, and Stone Gossard, they were all from Pearl Jam, played the backing guys, the band for Matt Dillon's character.
The grunge
Cliff.
Stillwater.
And they were called Citizen Dick.
Yeah, that's right. Like, hi, I'm Dick, you can touch me. That was the name of their album.
Touch me, I'm Dick.
There you go, touch me, I'm Dick. There you go. Chris Cornell was, of course, also in it.
He was from Soundgarden.
Yes.
And actually, Chris Cornell was considered to play the role of Cliff. And Cliff was, if you look at Cliff and Chris Cornell next to each other, you can see that he was completely modeling his look as Cliff on
Just
Chris Cornell.
Matt Damon happens to be a slightly better actor.
He is.
And a much worse musician.
And Eddie Vedder's lyrics and voice was dubbed in for Matt Damon's for the singing scenes.
Not Matt Damon.
Matt Dillon. I'm going to keep calling him Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Matt Dillon. All right. Eric Stoltz was the mime.
Yes. And I did not know that until I looked at IMDb afterwards.
Yeah. So. And Cameron Crowe comes in as does a cameo as the journalist interviewing Matt Dillon's character Cliff and asks him, well, you know, touch me, I'm Dick. What does that mean?
What does that mean? Well, you know, it can mean a couple of things, you know. Yeah, we know what it means, bro. We do know.
Did you recognize Paul Giamatti?
Yes. He was the kissing guy.
He was the kissing guy.
He was the makeout guy.
The first film that he was ever in.
Really?
Paul Giamatti.
He nailed it.
And
I bet he did.
And what's interesting to me is that I always feel like Paul Giamatti is older than I am.
Oh, yeah.
But I bet
because
that
he plays older
but
guys.
But I bet that he's like similar age to me. Because, I mean, this is like 20s. The people in their 20s in this film.
Well, he's older than you. He's 55. So younger than me.
Yeah.
Older than you.
Yeah. Okay. Tim Burton made cameo.
I said, is that fucking Tim Burton? I know. What is he doing in this movie?
He plays.
Was he just in town?
He was just in town.
Yeah,
he was just in
that
town.
That makes sense, I
guess. And Cameron Crowe in an article with Rolling Stone said it was cool that Tim Burton did it, but he said everybody on the set, all of the people that worked on the crew, were super excited because they're like, oh, maybe we can get a job on Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
he plays the director who makes video date videos.
Yes.
And then Jeremy Piven.
I know.
You must chill.
You must chill.
He played essentially that same character as he played Doug. He was a checkout guy who recognized Steve. You mentioned Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp was considered for the role of Steve, but he turned it down.
Really? What was he doing?
He felt that he couldn't, at that time, say, I love you convincingly on screen.
Johnny Depp. Get out of your own head,
Johnny Depp.
What is wrong with you, dude?
I got to show you this picture.
I'm pretty sure at some point on 21 Jump Street, he said, I love you, but who knows?
So, all right. The general plot of this movie, it's one of those where it's intersecting storylines, multiple characters,
right.
And they all kind
very,
of have their
kind
own
kind of popular back then
story
too,
arc.
Right?
They were breaking the fourth wall on the regular, talking directly to the camera,
which
telling
startled
their
me
story,
when they did that.
Telling their story.
I'm looking behind me.
So here's how it goes. Janet, played by Bridget Fonda, loves Cliff, played by Matt Dillon. Cliff loves Cliff. And
Cliff does love
his
Cliff.
Groupies, and he has maybe
and giant boobs.
And yes, he prefers a fuller figure, but he doesn't really pay her much attention. She's way more into him. He's just not that into
absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely.
And then, okay, Steve and Linda have a meet cute.
Fuck is that? Is
a
that
meet
a thing?
Cute? Yeah, where you meet cute. They meet at the concert, and then they meet again. They run into each other again in the same.
Is that
night.
A term?
A meet cute. Yeah, you've never heard of that?
That
they have a
like,
meet cute.
It sounds like a small piece of sausage.
No, they have a meet cute. They get together. They date.
You see each other across a room, and then you bump into each other at a grocery store. That type of thing.
Yeah, they get together. They get pregnant accidentally.
Oops.
She gets into a car accident, loses the baby. They break up because of this crisis. And then in the end, they get back together. Really, that is the scope of that story arc.
That's the arc.
And then Debbie is trying to find love online because she's, and this is the early days.
Yeah, this is video dating.
So it's not even online. It's
one of the more terrifying trends we ever saw in dating.
Yeah.
There's just no way for that not to be horrific.
And they made these like weird videos. People would make weird videos of themselves.
Like, you know, I mean, now we have TikTok and stuff, but at least you can say, okay, well, they're just goofing around and it only took them 30 seconds. They didn't go into a studio with a green screen to fly around the city.
Correct. Right. So there's scenes where she's flying through Seattle.
Yes. True.
And then she's trying to find love in this video dating way. It goes very badly for her. And in the end, she meets somebody kind of the old fashioned way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the overview of it. We're not going to go through like sort of the finer points of the plot. Although I am going to ask you a question at the end about sort of the bigger picture of things.
I'm so ready for that.
So what we're going to do now is go ahead and talk about the life lessons that we found in this film and evaluate them. Okay, so the first one that I want to talk about, it happens early on, and it's Linda and her friend are talking, and Linda has met a man, and she's talking about getting married to this guy.
Right.
And he's scamming her.
After a date.
After a couple of dates, and he's scamming her. In the end, you find out.
Because
he's Luis. He's
Luis. Mysterious Spaniard.
He says he's going to be leaving the country in 2 weeks, right. And then, but they go out and they see him, and he hasn't
didn't really
left.
Think that out very carefully,
no,
did he?
It's not that big of a scene, you know, yeah. You're going to probably run into each other.
You're not in New York. You
know? She says to her friend, you know, if I marry him, he could get a green card. And then I'd always have someone I could go out with.
Yeah, that's okay. So that is legitimately what some people think about.
But that's not the life lesson.
No.
Here's the life
lesson.
On
me.
Her friend says,
Linda, you're talking about marrying this guy?
I'm tired of all the games.
If you were married, would we still go out dancing?
You definitely will not.
And
her so
answer,
sorry.
Her answer
you
is
definitely won't.
Yeah, her answer is yes. We
of
will always
course.
Go out dancing, and they're at a club dancing, and that's when they see Luis sitting at the bar,
right, with another chick.
But this is the truth. You don't still go out dancing.
Sometimes you're limited by circumstance, right?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's no place to go dance.
Right. We have very few here, but we still go occasionally. Mm-hmm. But you can't pretend that once you're married, it's just going to be like you're going out with your friends with a girlfriend, mm-hmm. right? Because now you're making a life together and there's just less of that. Can you have friends? Of course you can have friends. You should have friends, mm-hmm. right? But are you going to go partying and dancing a lot? Probably less, right?
Probably less.
First of all, life is tiring. Okay? Life is exhausting.
Married life, especially in the early days, can be
Yeah, there's a lot. You're like, oh my God, I don't know anything about this person.
Especially if you have kids early on.
Oh my gosh. My parents, especially my mother, gave me this advice. Get married, fine. Take a couple of years, 2 to 3 years, maybe more. Get to know each other. Go do things. Go on trips. Because once the babies start coming, then that is much harder to do.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure you get to know each other first. Mm-hmm. Right? Get to know each other as husband and wife. Then think about having kids, which is smart.
This is one of those things that I think is you see sometimes in movies where it's idealized. Marriage, you know, like, or it's shown to be so horrible. Like there's two extremes.
Yeah.
But really the reality is you
all of a sudden you're, you know, Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner murdering each other in your house, right? That's not accurate for the most part either.
Would you also say that as you get more settled in your life, that different things become fun?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, have you seen the new Game of Thrones? Let's sit down and watch
Let's watch that, right?
As you do things more mm-hmm. together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you do things like, and guys joke around about it like, oh, okay, now my life is, you know, going to antique shops and, you know, going to the floral festival or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you do things like that,
right?
And then also meals become more of an event a lot of times as well,
mm-hmm.
where you might just have, you know, driven through McDonald's or grabbed a sandwich at home
mm-hmm.
or eaten your leftover Chinese food. Now you have to, now you're taking into consideration another person and meals become more of an event as well.
Yeah.
Like some dates are just, let's go out to dinner and eat food. Whereas when you're a kid, you're like, let's go out and get crunk and, you know, and
you know,
dance
the night starts at 11:30.
Yeah, let's do this.
Oh my God.
And keep in mind that a lot of times our reasons for going out was to find somebody to hook up with or date or meet new girls or guys or whatever, mm-hmm. right? That is generally frowned upon within the bounds of a marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's not a good thing.
Another life lesson we can discuss is at a certain point, Janet, played by Bridget Fonda, she's, you know, kind of talking about herself being 23.
I think time's running out to do something bizarre. Somewhere around 25, bizarre becomes immature.
I understand what she's saying, right? She's mm-hmm. saying that you can be fun and quirky now.
And a little irresponsible.
Right, and have some kind of weird affectation, like you carry a stuffed duck wherever you go or whatever, right?
Or you're Cliff, where you work four jobs right. and you're doing just your band.
Yeah, exactly.
And what, you know, so like the time runs out
right.
for there to be space to do that. So what do you think of that?
Well, I don't like that one. It is a time, 25-ish or whatever, is when things do start getting more serious and you start to think about things like maturity mm-hmm. and long-term plans. I always argued that after 25, there's really no good birthdays, right? Because things do become more serious and you're starting to settle down in a life rather than just kind of bouncing around.
Well, the expectation is that, right?
That's
the expectation is that you've got to have your shit figured out by then. You should, right. if you've gone through college, you're probably kind of coming to the end even maybe of graduate school if you've gone on to graduate school. But at this point, you got to get your shit figured out because...
You know who would argue against that?
Hmm.
Baz Luhrmann.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I'm so
See,
glad that you brought that up.
See, look how smart you are. I love it when you think like me.
I was thinking of that episode that where we talked to Andrea about the sunscreen song and how in one of the lyrics is some of the most interesting, don't worry about having
what
things
you're
going to
be when
out.
You grow up.
Yeah, like some of the most interesting people at 40, I know, don't know what they're going to be when they grow up. Right. And I love that. And so I actually disagree with her. I think that I think you should keep doing bizarre things.
Yeah. You don't want bizarre to edge into
self-destructive
schizophrenia, right? You don't want to be Kanye.
No.
But it's okay to be more individual, right? Yeah. Because it's so easy just to say, okay, I'm going to play golf and I have to get the dad New Balance tennis shoes.
Let's center this a little bit on Gen X too. Because one of the things that I mentioned in the introduction is that at the time that this was film was out, they were calling Gen X the slacker generation.
Right.
It was typified very well in another Life Lessons movie that we're going to do, which is Reality Bites, when you're looking at early 20 somethings in the early 90s. And I think that there was some pressure, and I think that what she says there reflects that there was some pressure there's a pressure to grow up. And I think that
conform,
is with everybody.
Grow up.
Conform, grow up, get your shit together, do that. Right. And I think that
settle down.
Certainly there was a lot of that pressure then. I imagine that it is the same now, but I don't know. I'm not 20. I don't know how it feels to be 20 now.
Well, I think you can argue that the year or the age at which you're expected to kind of be out on your own has increased because you do have more kids waiting longer to get married, waiting longer to move out.
Oh, yeah.
Of their
parents'
house, they can't afford it, which is perfectly legit. Now, when I moved out, I couldn't afford it either, but I did it because I was an idiot. My friend Mike was like, hey, you want to get an apartment? I'm like, yeah, how much is it? He says, I'm like, I don't know, $500. I'm like, I don't have that. Yeah, let's do it. I'm making $20,000 a year, cash money. Let's do this. whoa, wait a second. I have a date this weekend. I better go buy a Jeep.
Let me put that on my credit card.
Yeah, let me charge that on my credit card and finance the down payment at 27% or whatever it was. I was a financial wizard. But yeah, I think that age has slid a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's interesting for me because I have a daughter who is turning 24 in November.
You ain't an empty nester.
And she's still living at home.
Right.
She did college and she came back home and she's living with me at home.
Oh, you have a nice house. I mean, why? I don't blame her.
Yeah, she's working. I don't charge her rent or anything like that. But I remember that when I was young, that was a thing that could
parents
happen.
Would start
parents
to
would
say,
charge you rent.
Okay, now you owe us $200 a month.
You know,
or whatever.
Yeah, you want to do this? You want to come and go from this house as you please?
Right.
You start paying rent.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't do that. She gets room and board from me. And she pays for her expensive hair care on her own and all of her going out and traveling and all of that. But it's different now. And I couldn't wait to get out of the house.
Oh, my God. Same here. And my parents were lovely, lovely people.
Yeah.
Right? I was extremely lucky, but I still really just wanted to get out of the house.
Well, there's a scene in Singles where Kira Sedgwick, as Linda, is holding her garage door opener. Yeah. The garage door openers are very symbolic here. They are signs like of love tokens. It's like you've got your own parking access, right? And she's saying, this is my sign of adulthood.
Look, I have a parking spot.
And I think that there was certainly for our generation, or at least the people I knew in Gen X, independence was a big thing. They wanted to be independent. That independence may have looked like Cliff working four jobs.
Right.
To be able to afford a crappy apartment.
Yeah. Guess what? That looks a lot like today. Probably.
Probably. Right.
Yeah. I have four side hustles.
That's not wrong. But it's still independence. So
absolutely. I have one question about the setting of this movie and how it affected you while watching it.
Okay.
Now I know you have a couple of decades that you just have a problem with because they're dirty.
70s is filthy.
Do you think the 90s was a dirty decade?
No, because I know that...
I mean, grunge is not hygienic term.
It looked... I know that...
You think deep down they're still showering.
I think there was showering happening. Right.
They just looked like they affected a look of non-showering.
Yeah, that the flannel thing and all of that. No, it looks sturdy. And remember, of course, smoking was still allowed everywhere.
Yeah.
So that
starting to become maybe a little bit less. Like I don't think you could smoke on planes then.
No, but in bars you could.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, in bars it was everywhere.
When we went out, we either went out to Old Town Alexandria in Virginia or Georgetown in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just reek.
Oh, it was terrible.
When you came home, right?
It was so bad.
And Febreze hadn't even been invented yet.
Oh my God. And if you didn't take a shower,
you just smelled like...
smelled, the bed smelled...
ass.
My hair would... because I had long hair, it was gross. Yeah. And if you happened to wake up hungover, it was so bad. It was the worst. But showers... after going out and you were covered in that like patina of smoke,
party scum,
then they were very rewarding.
Well, sure.
They felt so good.
Showers are as rewarding as you want to make them. That's what I mean?
Oh, Mark. All right. So then let's talk about another one. The AIDS crisis and the impact on college life. Because what Linda is doing when she first meets Steve and they're having these long conversation as one does when you are first meeting someone. So they're hanging out and having these deep conversations and doing the get to know you thing. Yep. And she's talking to him about how she really had hoped that by the time she got to college, she'd really be able to meet someone great.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I got there a semester late. And it shows her going to a party where you're meant to dress as your favorite contraceptive.
Right. So I saw some condoms. I saw
the pill.
I don't remember seeing the pill.
That
I saw
lady,
the diaphragm.
The diaphragm, but then when she first walks in and the woman says, oh, here are condoms, and she's wearing that thing on her head.
Contraceptive foam.
Foam, yep.
Of some sort. I could just shoot moose up there, I guess. I don't know. It was so calm. I mean.
Condom heads.
So that culture really started right about the time I went to college.
Yeah.
You had to make sure you had tons of condoms.
Yeah.
And I did, and I didn't use them all, I'm sure. Like I bought this giant box.
Economy size?
Yeah. And my roommate and I just like put it on the desk or whatever, like hidden a little bit away behind some garbage, I'm sure. But that was a big thing then, right? And like you were supposed to, like if you're too shy to buy them, you're supposed to go to your RA, whatever. But that was still very much part of the consciousness back then because it was a serious thing.
It was a very serious thing. It was not now they've, thank God, come to
be able to treat it
and people can live with it for years and years and years. I mean, they live normal lives that are on medication. And thank God. But first you went through the stigma, which AIDS was a gay person's disease. And therefore, less important. They're less alive anyway. Yeah. So why do we, matter. It doesn't matter. We're just awful. And then finally they get to the point where they say, anybody can get that.
White kid got it.
That white kid got it. And now we better pay attention. Yeah. And then of course contraception became a big thing. Now, I wasn't in college at the time.
Yeah.
I was working.
Yeah.
But contraception was still a big thing, even if you were working and not in college.
Yeah. Christina had some pretty serious game, you guys.
So that was interesting to see.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that really centers that generation. I think that that's something that's very, very significant to Gen X.
Yeah, and even at that party, they even say something, and I don't remember exactly what the quote was, but something like, you know, love can equal death, you know, or whatever it was. And that's what, I mean, and that's the kind of shit you heard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, you're going on a date tonight? You could die.
You could die. And then you would always have the special episodes of TV shows where somebody with the gay character would come on and have AIDS. And then everybody would get to know that they could be friends with them. And then later they would die.
Well, and remember what huge deal it was when Princess Diana
hugged someone with AIDS.
An AIDS patient. And that was, and even though
to show that compassion, and it was a big thing.
And by the way, the war on science did not just happen last year, right?
No.
Even though everything we knew about it said you're not going to get it from just hugging someone,
right.
Everybody still felt like, well, you say that, but
there was a long stretch of time where those people who early on sadly contracted the disease, where they were treated like lepers.
Of course.
And it was horrifying. If you look back on those, we should do an episode about the AIDS crisis sometime, because that would be an interesting episode to talk about. Okay.
Oh, I have one. One of the kind of recurring life lessons is how should you be when you're dating, when you're just trying to meet somebody, and then when you're dating, right? All the, you know, strategies. Should I call? Should I not call? What should I say when I walk up to them? If you remember, Steve comes up to Kira Sedgwick. Yeah, well, she's Kira Sedgwick to me. But yeah, he comes up to her. He's trying to pass it off as, look, I'm just going to be honest, but really, it's kind of a line.
And she calls him
on it. Yeah, exactly. So he comes up, he goes,
my friend and I have this long-running argument, and here it is. He says that when you come to a place like this, you can't just be yourself, you have to have an act. So anyway, I saw you standing there, so I thought, A, I could just leave you alone, B, I could come up with an act, or C, I could just be myself. I chose C. What do you think?
And what does she say?
She says, A, I think you have an act, and B, your act is
pretending that
you don't have an act.
That's right. Exactly.
And then he skulks off because she's called him on it. He and his buddy are going, they go out with this in mind and they're talking about it. His friend says that to him.
Yeah.
Then Steve says to his friend, well, what if you meet this super woman and you're your super self and she shoots you down, she rejects you. And he said, well, then it doesn't matter because it was just an act.
Right.
So you go
you
go out with this armor. That's crazy because because getting rejected has got to be, I think it's different. I don't know how men do it.
It is, especially when you're just kind of trying it out or whatever, like that, now you're out on your own. You can't pass notes in class or have your friend ask if she likes you type of thing. Check one. Mm-hmm. Yes. No. It is pretty intimidating to go do that.
What is your act?
But unless you look like Brad Pitt, you have to be able to find some way to, you know, break the ice in some way. Tell me what you believe mine is.
I'm telling a joke.
That's right. I tell a joke. It's not like a joke like, you know, a priest, a rabbi, and a dog walk into the bar, right? It can't be that kind of joke. First of all, I don't do those kind of jokes. I'm not good at those kind of jokes. That would be horrific.
I promise you that you wouldn't get zero play.
Exactly. You might as well start off with a magic trick.
That's a cautionary tale, everyone, for what not to do.
Do that. And of course, you know, a lot of guys will then think that they have to look for the line, right? You know, if I told you you had a great body, would you hold it against me?
Oh, and then
no, but I might smack you in the face.
And sometimes they'll try and do it ironically, but you're still doing the line.
Yeah, you're still doing the line.
Yeah, no.
So I just try to think of something funny. Now, there are many, 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 many times where I'll see something I'm like, I can't think of anything funny to say, or I don't think I can think of anything funny enough to get her to notice me. I kind of got over that as I got older because you get more confident in your own skin and you kind of know who you are a little bit. Back then, I didn't know who I was at all. Mm-hmm. I had no self-awareness whatsoever. You think I'm not self-aware now? Back then, I was like a houseplant. I mean, I didn't know anything about me, okay? But, and then, of course, and you know, now it's very different because you might burn all those lines early on texting. But in person, it is pretty intimidating to be a guy like that. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, on the other side, yes, women don't have to, generally, you can obviously, but they didn't generally have to make the first move. But then they have to decide how to react to the first move from a guy. And I'm sure 90% of those are unwanted.
Here's how I always kind of navigated that is you make it clear, you may not be the one that's making the approach, but you make it clear, if I remember back in the day, you make it clear that you're open to the approach.
Right.
So it could be a smile or a look over.
Play with your hair a little bit.
Well, I never went that route, but like the look and look away and then the look back. So I remember doing that. And then if the approach happened, absent that, absent the invitation, anybody who comes over and is just like,
hey, what's up?
Throwing down the lines.
Can I buy you a drink?
Come on, you know.
Now, would you take a drink and then blow them off?
No, I never.
If they sent over a drink from across the restaurant or whatever, are you taking the drink? Not interested in the guy?
Well, I'd take the drink and then I'd talk to the guy for a few minutes. If I wasn't interested in him, I'd say thank you very much for the drink.
Okay.
My friends and I used to go out.
And you drink for free.
$10 in our pockets and just enough money to get home if we had some kind of an emergency. And otherwise we drank for free the whole night. But I wasn't mean to anyone like that.
Right. With the drink.
Now, I will tell you who would give me a lot of free drinks.
Bartenders. Yeah, because they liked you.
So I got a lot of free drinks from bartenders.
Like, you know what? I'm going to buy you a drink. Here's a free drink.
I had a lot of dates with bartenders, too. So I was like the bartenders.
Because they were really going places, those bartenders.
Well, as a matter of fact, there was one I met. He was a bartender, and then later he owned like half of the bars in Milwaukee.
That man is Bill Gates.
No, God, no. So I want to talk about the tricks that we tell ourselves when we're in relationships.
All right.
And do guys do this? Because we saw Janet do this.
I am not entirely sure I'm going to tell you the truth here.
Janet
but let's see.
Was waiting for Cliff to come over, and Cliff was blowing her off.
Right.
And she was trying not to call him.
Yes.
And so what she said is, well, I know I'm not going to, I don't want to call him because I don't want to seem needy. And then she's like, but men do like to be called. And then so she's trying to distract herself.
Yeah.
And she does all these things. But she's laser focused in her mind on the fact that he was supposed to be there and he's not there.
Right.
And where is he? And so she does these tricks. So she makes herself a salad and then she says, okay, I'm going to wait.
By the way. That salad looked dangerously out of date.
The lettuce
did not look good. The cucumber and the tomato were fine, but that lettuce was sketch.
It was, but it made me hungry for a salad. I was like, good.
That rotten salad makes me want a regular salad.
And every time I watch this movie, I always want a salad after I watch that scene. Yeah.
She didn't even know how to cut the tomatoes right.
She says that, okay, I'm going to call him, I'll wait an hour and then maybe I'll call him.
And then they try to leave it up to fate. Right?
And she's like, okay, I'm going to make it, then I'm going to leave this up to fate. If I make this basket with my napkin.
Yeah.
Throwing it away, then I'll call him. That's
of course,
a, it's a sign.
Like, then you miss, you're like,
and
okay,
then she's like, two out of three. And that's what she does.
Yeah.
So.
And then she's like, wait, did I say if I made it, I was calling him? Or if I miss it,
I'm calling him. And then she calls him,
yeah,
right? So what is, and then it was busy. And then she says, that's fate telling me not to call. Now, that's where she stopped.
Yeah.
I am afraid to tell you that there are women who probably wouldn't have
keep
stopped.
Dialing
they kept dialing until he answered. Okay. So my question is do women do that? I know that there are some women that do that. I know that people probably do that. Do men, do you know? I mean, you maybe know, but.
I mean, to a certain extent, mm-hmm. right? But men are also kind of fine with, oh, she didn't answer. You guys want to go to the bars? You know, whatever. I mean, you definitely have times where you're stressing about them not returning your call. And of course, that was a very different age from a communication standpoint.
Absolutely.
Right now, you send them a message. You can see that you're on red.
Yeah.
And they're just ignoring you.
Yeah.
Right? That's aggravating.
Or you can, or now the kids can see where they actually are with their little emojis.
Turn that off, children. Just turn it off. Turn that off.
Because that's got to be dry. I mean, can you imagine? Yeah. She would just now look at her phone and go, well, he's
down at the brewery, whatever, you know?
He clearly blew me off, right? So different time, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so back then we would do things like leave messages on message machines, on answer machines. And also fanatically kind of check yours, right? Hit the button. You have zero messages. You're like, oh, motherfucker, whatever. So, yeah, to a certain extent, although I think that was more a girl thing.
Women are going to be more, and especially because during that time, I know I was like that. I still am like that. Yeah. I don't make the first call. If it's early stages of dating, I'm not calling.
No.
I'll wait until, because I always figure if this person
he'll
is
die
interested.
On that hill.
Well, it's just if he's interested, he'll call.
So I'll bring up a communication method that you probably aren't familiar with because you didn't live in a dorm. You have the dry erase memo boards. Everybody had a memo board. I mean, that was just like issued to you, basically. Mm-hmm. Everybody had a message board. And, you know, you get back from class and then, or the MTV room or farting around playing soccer, whatever you were doing, right? Sometimes not class. And you see like the big note there with a big heart or whatever, you know, and that's a way of communication. Like I stopped by your door. Here's me claiming some territory here because I wrote this giant heart. I'm basically peeing on the tree here just to let everybody know that I came by and look, giant heart. You know, but that was another way of communicating back and forth. And if the person just kind of erases it, you know, and doesn't reciprocate in any way, tragedy.
Oh,
I mean, that's tragedy.
That's
right?
Harsh.
Like, why did you take my message down? Da, da, da. I'm like, I don't know, because nobody could see any other messages on my board.
So,
okay.
So do we want, there's a lot of talk about wanting mystery and drama versus wanting straightforward, no games.
Yeah. So I'm always suspicious of anybody who says, I don't want any drama. They definitely want some drama, right? Because now you don't want horrible drama and you don't necessarily want it to always happen to you. But yes, you want your relationship, I think, to be interesting and at times challenging. Now, you don't want to actually create problems, although sometimes people make a mistake and think that's how, you know, they feel bored. And they want to create drama or they just have actual problems and they have drama. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, I think you want, you know, you don't want to term it a battle, but you want to, you know, you kind of want there to be a process and you don't want to just go like, you know, hey, we're going together now and, you know, we're staying home and watching TV and everything is just, you know, vanilla and, you know, bland and whatever. You do like, And there are guys who will say, you know, I like a girl with some spirit. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, but you do. I mean, sometimes having a challenge can hold your interest.
Yeah.
And you're doing that, right? When you're saying, I'm not calling a guy.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
basically being a challenge, right? You want them to overcome this hurdle.
It is a respect thing, I think. You know, that's the way that it always felt to me. It's just sort of like, I mean, I said to a guy once, he asked me for my phone number and I said, it's in the book. You can look it up. And I liked him.
Yeah. See, that's, to me, that's so self-defeating.
And I was like, if you want to find me, you'll know where to find me. Yeah. I really appreciate it. And I think that a lot of women appreciate the pursuit. And that is the thing that tails off pretty quickly into the relationship.
Well, of course.
There's no reason to do it.
Yeah, it would
right?
be strange to do it.
But it is attractive.
And I think people will then, at a certain point, they miss that kind of, you know, challenge and back and forth. So they'll create drama in the relationship for no great reason.
Could be. That could actually be. I don't disagree with that. All right. So Steve says when his dad left his mom. And right before he left, Steve was 8 and dad said to him, have fun, stay single.
But okay, horrible advice to a young 8-year-old. First of all, he's going to stay single for quite some time. He's 8. He's not going to get too heavily involved in third grade or whatever you are when you're 8. And of course, that advice is coming from someone who's leaving his wife. So maybe not the best source. But there is something to be said for don't get married the first year you date, maybe. Don't, you know, marry the first person you date. Although, in my son's case, that worked out great. You have to be careful that you're not rushing into it because you're thinking, I need to get married now. I find that whenever people have as their goal the relationship, that's problematic, mm-hmm. really, because what you really should be doing is meeting a lot of people and you'll find a person with whom you want to have a relationship. But mm-hmm. if you're running around the city looking for a relationship, mm-hmm. A, you come off as desperate. B, you make hasty bad choices. And you're almost certain to be disappointed by most of them because that's, I mean, the reality of life is most relationships end.
And I agree. And I do think that there is, though, kind of as Janet said, you know, at 25, you can't do crazy things anymore because it starts to look immature.
Yeah.
I think that there is, or there was at least when I was that age, there was that pressure that, you know, you've done this, you've got school, you've done this. Now you gotta get married. Get married was a big thing for me. Like that was a big thing in
your culture, in whatever.
My family and all the rest. That was a big deal. Certainly you can see that as a function of a focus of what's going on here in this film. I don't know if that is such the case. So this is, let's kind of summarize this. And I'm going to ask you that big overarching question.
Right.
Which is, do you think that this is a Gen X thing? Or do you think that it is an age range thing? That this film could resonate with anybody who is in their early 20s.
I think it's an age thing. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like you said, the Gen X generation was being termed slackers, right? Mm-hmm. Because they were in their teens to 20s. And mm-hmm. guess what? Yeah, you're slacker, mm-hmm. right? For the most part. Mm-hmm. So I think that everybody has these same kinds of relationship struggles. You're trying to figure out who you are. And before you know who you are, you also want to then unite destinies with somebody else who you also don't know. So it is always a challenge. I would say this should resonate really across generations.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that there are certain elements of this that are specific to Gen X. So, you know, the contraceptive thing.
By the way, if you're a young person listening to this, and I know you're not, you should still be using contraception.
They just know that now.
Right.
But for her, she knew of a time where, you know, you were sitting there going, I'm getting to college. I gotta get laid.
I gotta get condoms.
And now,
by the way, that doesn't necessarily follow. I don't know if you know that. Just buying the condoms, this is like a Seinfeld joke. Just buying the condoms does not necessarily mean you use the condoms.
That's right. It's true.
Just sit there on your desk.
That's true. It's true. What do you think? There was a scene in this movie, and then we'll wrap it up. There's a scene in this movie that I really loved because it reminded me of what's so great about the early days of a relationship.
Play it on me.
And that is when she goes to his apartment and she's looking at his things.
Yeah.
And it's,
she's like, I like that too.
That's the kiss at the Hotel DuVille. Right, right. And I have that too. You find the little places where you connect. You already know you're kind of connecting with this person. Otherwise you wouldn't be chilling with them and talking to them and going to their apartment or whatever. And they've had some really good conversations, but you see all of their things and you start to look and you start to learn about somebody looking at their bookshelf. And she learns about him because she looks at his record collection.
Now, if you came into my house today to do that, other than the fact that it's not super tidy, you might go, I wonder why he has a framed poster of Jim Palmer in his underwear. Am I dealing with some sort of libertine?
What is happening? Why
I am non-discriminating.
Have all this recording equipment?
Yeah, exactly. What is going on? Are you recording some kind of audio porn or something?
Jim Palmer is your inspiration.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
What do I look like? Well, let me tell you. I'm tan. I look great in jockeys.
And I have a pith helmet.
I do have a pith helmet here.
Yeah, see? See?
So yeah, you could get some mixed messages
but
here.
What was your favorite part of like the early days of dating someone? What's the thing that's the best about, I mean, obviously I probably like the
well, yeah, yeah,
you but, know, but not that.
not that. How big of an event getting together and going out is, right? All right, I got to ask her on a date. All right, we went out. We just went out and got ice cream last time. I got to do something bigger now, right? Mm-hmm. I got like $40 in the bank. I'm going to take her out to a nice dinner. Is there a Red Robin around here somewhere? Or Fridays? I want to go someplace where the waiters have swag all over their
they
shirt.
They have a lot of flair.
Yeah, but I think that this kind of each date was an event.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
and
exciting,
you, and of
yeah.
course, now if you're in a long-term relationship, you should still strive to try to create those things, right? And do, you know, things that can be counted as an event. But it's harder now. And we usually just say, okay, we'll do vacation. Right. Mm-hmm. And your events are so much more expensive, but it's easy to just say, what are you doing? Nothing. We gonna go to something to eat. Yeah. But I think that's it. Just the fact that each encounter was an event.
Mm-hmm. So this was a good conversation. I yeah. like doing.
By the way, we recommend watching the movie no matter where you are in your life.
Yeah, I would say I think it's a good movie. It's a cute movie. It's not as good.
It's not Say Anything.
No, right? It's not. And it's not, it's certainly not.
It's not even St. Elmo's Fire.
No,
right?
And it's not as good as certainly Almost Famous.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was a, I mean,
yeah,
that's
a masterpiece.
That's a, yeah, that's a movie for the ages, especially if you were into grunge back then.
It's a nostalgic
feeling. It's a great
feeling.
Nostalgic trip. I mean, you could see Eddie Vedder sitting there spacing out on the couch and singing in a club.
Yeah. And it's, and they have like Alice in Chains and Soundgarden play.
And they wouldn't record. They insisted to play in playing live.
Yeah.
So that's a live recording of Alice in Chains singing at that club.
Yep.
Which is really cool.
It is.
So if that's
cool.
If that was your scene at any point, if at any point you tied a flannel shirt around your waist, you would probably really enjoy the nostalgic.
Or wore tights with shorts.
Yeah. Right.
And docks. That was.
There you go.
Oh man. And cute hats and stuff. Bridget Fonda had great style in that movie.
She did.
But again, this movie is coming out of this is like 91 that they filmed it. They still had 80s hair.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and really the grunge movement was really just starting to gain some momentum.
For sure. For sure. But yeah, it was a good fun movie to watch. A lot of good lessons that came out of it though. I thought a lot of good conversation coming out of that. So that was fun. And now we are going to tell you all about our social media. We have a Twitter at Extemporaneous2. We have personal Twitters. I am at Christina Gen X. Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. And we are going to tell you about our new podcast. Mark and I and Joanne Palumbo, our other co-host, have a great and very popular podcast.
Yeah.
It's a reaction show to AMC's Interview with the Vampire.
Which by the way, we wholeheartedly recommend you watch.
We are currently, as of today, the second most popular Interview with the Vampire reaction podcast. Now, it fluctuates, but the only one before us is the official AMC podcast.
Which is a bit of cheating, I think. I mean, that's a little unfair because I don't have,
we don't have access to the stars.
And I don't have AMC Network, backing us and
doing the production.
Although I would put Christina's production up against theirs any day. Well, they only have, but no.
It's exciting. So come and check us out. If you haven't watched the show, it's a great show. If you know, and we're really proud of the podcast that we do. It's comedic and it's serious. We get into some pretty deep textual analysis and comparison between the books and the movie, books and the series. So come and give us a listen.
It's called
Vampire Insider, and we are available on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
Unless you have like some real weird favorite, in which case, what are you even doing with your life?
All right. Well, thank you all very much for coming and listening to us each week. We really do appreciate it.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Bye.
Wow.
I remember, I'll give you an example of how horrible I was at certain times. There was this girl that I liked in college. She came to our fraternity, she would be at our fraternity parties, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'd really like to go out with her. I couldn't think of a way to do it. So what did I do? I stared at her like a maniac for one whole party. I just would just stare at her.
Oh God, that was creepy.
I know. And then she would look up and I'd kind of look away a little bit. I'd stare at her. Now,
that would be alarming.
The worst part of that is it actually worked. So
oh, no.
I was given false confidence and then I tried it again and I'm pretty sure I still have some restraining orders out there somewhere
That's
floating
awful.
Around.